Supreme Court justices are trying to wrap up this year's term, and they're issuing opinions at an accelerated pace. Yesterday, the court handed down decisions involving gender discrimination, the separation of church and state, and limits on the use of new police technologies. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
More than three decades ago, the Supreme Court ruled that police could not, without a warrant, put a listening device on a phone booth to eavesdrop on the conversation inside. The court said that the caller had a reasonable expectation of privacy. Since then, however, the court's been skeptical about that expectation of privacy. It's allowed garbage outside a home to be searched without a warrant. It's even allowed a person's yard to be viewed with special enhancement cameras from an airplane without a warrant. And so it was yesterday that the court's decision barring police from using heat detection devices on private homes was received with widespread surprise.
It was absolutely shocking.
George Washington law professor Stephen Salzberg is the author of a leading text on the criminal law. He, like many criminal law specialists, was shocked by the substance of the Supreme Court's decision and by the lineup of the justices who delivered it. The case before the court involved an Oregon man named Danny Kylo, who almost by accident became the target of a police investigation 10 years ago. Investigating a tip that someone else in Kylo's housing complex was growing marijuana, the police found that Kylo, too, had unusually high electricity bills. And so late one night, they hauled a so-called thermal imaging device across the street from Kylo's house and found that his walls registered more heat than adjacent buildings. From that, the police inferred Kylo was using high-intensity growing lights to raise marijuana inside. They got a warrant to search his house and found more than 100 plants. Kylo was sentenced to 69 months in prison, but appealed all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and yesterday he won.
A man's home is his castle, or a woman's home, too, is his castle, the individual living there. You know, and what you do in the privacy of your own home should be sacred. It should be something that you know is not going to be looked on by technology, of prying eyes of technology that is so advanced now.
Kylo's view that an individual's home is sacrosanct was embraced by the court in a 5-4 vote. The lineup of the justices was, as Professor Salzberg puts it,
the division, the split among the justices in this case is absolutely bizarre.
Indeed, writing the majority opinion was one of the court's most conservative justices, Antonin Scalia, joined by fellow conservative Clarence Thomas and three of the court's more liberal justices, Ginsburg, Souter, and Breyer. Writing the dissent was perhaps the court's most liberal justice, John Paul Stevens, joined by the conservative Chief Justice William Rehnquist and the two so-called swing justices, O'Connor and Kennedy. Justice Scalia's majority opinion said simply that the Fourth Amendment's ban on unreasonable searches draws a clear line at the entrance to a person's home. Scalia rejected the government's argument that heat detection devices are so limited in what they do, they only measure the heat of the walls, after all, that no intimate detail of a person's life can be compromised. Said Scalia, when it comes to an individual's home, all details are intimate. Who's to say, he asks, for example, that it's not an intimate detail to know at what hour each night the lady of the house takes her daily sauna and bath? What's more, said Scalia, the thermal imaging machine is only the first wave of such devices. And he noted that the Justice Department is currently conducting research projects to develop radar-based and sonar ultrasound-based surveillance systems that work through a building's walls. In another case, this one in the field of gender discrimination, the court, again by a 5-4 vote, upheld a federal law that imposes a heavier burden on men than on women in disputes over citizenship for children born out of wedlock overseas. If an American woman has an illegitimate child overseas, the child is automatically deemed to be an American citizen. But if the father of the child is an American and the mother a foreigner, the child is not considered an American citizen unless the father formally acknowledges the child in court before his or her 18th birthday. Yesterday, the Supreme Court upheld the law, with both female justices dissenting and accusing the majority of reinforcing sexual stereotypes. The case before the court involved an American man named Joseph Boulay, who fathered a son with a Vietnamese woman in Vietnam in 1969. The mother abandoned the child at birth, and the father raised him, first with another girlfriend in Vietnam, and then in the United States. When the boy was 22, however, he went to prison after pleading guilty to sexual assault, and 3 years later, the Immigration and Naturalization Service tried to deport him to Vietnam. He claimed he was an American citizen. His father went to court and got an order formally declaring the boy as his son, but it was too late. Under the federal law, he was not a citizen. The father and son challenged the federal citizenship law in court, claiming that it denied them equal protection of the law, since if the boy's mother had been an American and his father a foreigner, he would have been automatically considered a citizen. But in upholding the federal law yesterday, Justice Anthony Kennedy, writing for the 5-man majority, said Congress was justified in treating men and women differently in this law because women are, by definition, present at a birth, and men are not necessarily. Moreover, he said, the law is aimed at fostering a legitimate governmental interest, providing the opportunity for a parent-child relationship. Said Justice Kennedy, the difference between men and women in relation to the birth process is a real one, and the principle of equal protection does not forbid Congress to address the problem at hand in a matter specific to each gender. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, in an acid dissent, replied, "This decision represents a deviation from a line of cases in which we have vigilantly sought to prevent legislatures from enacting laws based on sexual stereotypes that may hold true for many, but not all, individuals." That sentiment was echoed by the lawyer who represented the father and son, Martha Davis, of the Now Legal Defense Fund.
My concern is reinforcing stereotypes, and in particular in this case, the stereotype that men fathers don't have a close relationship with their children by nature, and that women by nature have a kind of parental and close relationship with their children.
A third Supreme Court decision yesterday was on the subject of separation of church and state. 8 years ago, the High Court ruled that a public school that opened its doors to various civic groups in the evening could not exclude adult religious groups that wanted to meet there too. But the case ruled on yesterday involved a Bible and prayer group for elementary school children that wanted to meet on school grounds immediately after school. The case came from the Milford School District in upstate New York, where the children's religious group, called the Good News Club, is run by the Reverend Stephen Fournier and his wife. To make the club's meetings more convenient for the children, Mr. Fournier wanted to move them from his church to the school when classes were over.
We knew that there were other groups that used the school, the 4-H, which my daughter was a part of, and the Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts. So we figured, well, we'll just use the school, and that way it'll be convenient for the kids.
But the school board said no because of the fear that to allow the club would be an unconstitutional state establishment of religion. School Superintendent Peter Livshin.
They were not merely providing, moral instruction from a Christian perspective. They were outright providing religious instruction.
But yesterday, the Supreme Court ruled by a 6-3 vote that excluding the Good News Club was unconstitutional discrimination against the club because of its views. In other words, that religious speech cannot be singled out for exclusion from a place that is open to other groups espousing viewpoints on a wide array of other topics. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.